Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code. A lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
The buildup to what is about to unfold, and for all the reasons we've already discussed, it's just almost too much to comprehend.
I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about.
Hello, this is Alan Shipnuck, back for another Fire Drill podcast. It is Masters Week, best week of the year to many, not all. It's been quite a buildup. It's always a long preamble from the last major until the Masters. This year was extremely action-packed with all the subplots and everything else. So here to unpack it all, Michael Bamberger, Matt Janella. Gents, thanks for doing this.
Pleasure. I mean, come on. We're talking the Master. I mean, this is like when I lived in the Northeast, this sort of was the week in which you allowed yourself to think that spring was about to spring. You know what I mean? It was, this was when we thought, like when we got back from covering one of the, you know, how many Masters have we been going to? That was when you could start playing golf again. So there's that. I've generally just already builds that excitement, but also, I just think the current state of the game, the majors are even more major, and the Masters has always been an amazing major, and now it's even the theater about what's about to unfold is just, I just can't wait.
Well, now it starts a week early with, you know, with the ANWA, which was must watch this year with Rose Zhang, and people are still debating whether they should have laid up or not on the 15th hole, and it's like the Masters.
No, Alan.
Yes,
they're not debating.
I mean, I know
there's only one person, maybe two, the dad and the winner. I'm glad for her.
I didn't hate it. She was playing to win. It's like a birdie there, and the tournament's over. And like she was trying to, she was going for the jugular. I thought it was cool, but.
Matt, that's why our distinguished colleague was a cart boy and not a caddy at the Pebble Beach Links. Although there aren't too many water hazards there, although there is a big lake left of 18.
But I don't see Alan being a good caddy.
Alan, it's an absolute 100% layup.
100%. One of the great pleasures of watching the Augusta National Women's Amateur was Bones. You could hear his discomfort. He was just dying to take the bag off of Rosang's father's shoulder and get in there. He was so bothered by the whole thing.
The one thing I miss about Bones being back on JT's bag is Bones, the broadcaster, the announcer, the color commentator. I miss him.
Well, especially anything Augusta related. I mean, he's so authoritative on the putts the Masters.
He has seen a lot of it in his life, but he takes bad course management personally. So, like, if Jean Vandeveld does something, he's still mad at Jean Vandeveld. It's like Jean Vandeveld's trying his best, but Bones can't see it that way.
And again, Alan,
bad course management.
Alan and I were both standing there in 2006 in the 18th fairway. And the one thing I noticed is Bones was just not, they just were not talking to each other. They just were not having any conversation. So, yes, he had taken it personally that Phil was doing what Phil was doing.
That's great. Well, yeah. So it's amazing how, and we've talked about this before, Michael and I, how just the Masters used to be this small invitational, and it was an important tournament, but there was an intimacy, and it was you felt like you were guests of this little club. And now the campus has become supersized. It's kind of like this golf Disneyland, and now Masters Week. I mean, even Sunday, we're taping Sunday evening here. you have the drive, chip, and putt. You have a lot of players are starting to begin their Masters preps, including Tiger walking around with some wedges and a putter, as he did back in 2019, late on Sunday afternoon. And you have Bernhard Langer hitting balls on the range next to kids warming up for the drive, chip, and putt. Like, there's this intermixing of the events and the cultures of it all. It's a fascinating part of the preamble that didn't even exist, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. So Masters Week just gets bigger and bigger, just like the Augusta National footprint.
Well, here we are. We should take a second and talk sponsorship really quickly, because you're talking about drive, chip, and putt, and while you're talking about a lot of transcendent eyes coming to the game this week, this weekend, this upcoming week and weekend. And I finally have the definitive answer, by the way, to a question in which I know we get a lot. If someone is new to the game, men, women, or children, and they want to look into buying a set of clubs, the answer now is Robin Golf. RobinGolf.com. These people, it's a family-owned business. They make these really sleek, cool-looking sets of clubs for kids and beginners, men and women. This is a bit of a gateway solution from clubs to an actual set of clubs before you maybe get fit for a set of clubs. Go now to robingolf.com. We got Mother's Day coming up. We got Father's Day coming up. Kids are getting out of school soon. Fire Pit 15 gets you 15% off. Promo code Fire Pit 15. Robin Golf, guys. Excited to have them be a part of what we're doing. And their sets are on the way for my son and daughter and wife. And I look forward to breaking them in.
Matt, how many clubs do they want you to start with? You're a 10-year-old kid. You're athletic, but you're new to golf, like your son. How many clubs do they want in the bag?
Seven to nine, I think, is good. A driver and maybe a hybrid and like a five wood, you know, some sort of, you know, those three clubs, a putter, obviously, and then like a five and a seven iron or a wedge, you know, seven to nine clubs, essentially.
Nice.
That's what Michael plays now. Anyway, yeah.
What John Ashford more than plays, I need. You know, I mean, one of the great things about, you know, about the GOAT and where my family plays golf is they have the kids course. They have the GOAT tees. They have a 4,500 yard, 18 hole golf course. They can climb the ladder literally in one place. And they're going to be using Robin Golf Clubs. So
that's cool. We should note that Robin Golf is going to be sponsoring everything we do this week. Michael and I will be typing regularly, pretty much every day. We'll be podcasting throughout the week. I think we're going to wrangle Jeff Ogilvie for a few of those pods. So thanks to Robin Golf for the sponsorship. So let's look ahead to this Masters. There's so many things percolating, not least, you know, Brooks Koepka has now won two of his last six starts. How much weight do we put on that? Because they're on LIV, unknown. You know, this Masters becomes such an important yardstick for all those guys who went to the other tour, and you know they're sort of playing for their credibility to prove that they still got it, and all the slings and arrows about exhibition golf and carts and shotguns, and I think they're going to compete with quite an intensity. But other things, you know, Rory looking for the mythical green jacket. You've got this battle for number one. Scheffler trying to go back to back. You've got the likes of Rahm and other people who are trying to cement their standing as at the top of the game. I mean, Michael, what, as you look ahead to this Masters, what are you most keenly interested in? What are you most excited about?
Well, I'll answer for the broad public first, because there's such interest in Rory because he's been so out in front. You know, Alan, you have alluded to this several times, and it's taken me a while to actually grasp it, that Rory McIlroy really is the biggest name in golf right now. He's the only person this week who can complete the career Grand Slam. And I think there'll be he's been playing some great golf. He hasn't won a major in forever. So I think going in that, you know, for people who are not following golf keenly, but follow it to some degree, people want to know, can this guy close the deal? Can he win the career Grand Slam?
Think about the last shot that Rory hit at Augusta National, that hole out from the bunker on Sunday afternoon. It got him to second place last year, which is his best finish. And he's, he's actually been a top 10 machine at Augusta. That just a lot of them have felt a little backdoor-ish, and he hasn't really been in the thick of it. But across 72 holes, he tends to shoot a score that puts him not that far from the top. So it's just, can he get incrementally better? Can he tighten it up? He's played a lot of mediocre first rounds. Can he get off to a hot start? Like, but I agree. I mean, all eyes on Rory. There's also a guy named Tiger Woods. We haven't seen him with a golf club in his hand for a little while. And he's always of huge interest. If there's any course where he turns into a chess match and Tiger can just rely on his knowledge and his magic hands and his ability to think his way around a golf course, I mean, you would think it'd be Augusta National. What about you, Matt? What are you looking forward to?
I mean, the storylines are just, it's endless. It's endless. I can't believe, you know, I'm just right. Cam Smith, you know, where is he at? But, you know, yeah, Brooks is one thing, but like Cam Smith and what he's done the last couple of years in the big venues and stages, his short game and what he did at the old course, and where I think he kind of sits in the game of golf with a real, like, I don't really give a shit kind of an attitude, is very dangerous. And this golf course obviously suits him. You got guys like Jason Day, Adam Scott, Justin Rose. They've shown a pulse. They love this golf course. It seems to like them. And obviously Patrick Reed, Rory Brooks. I mean, you know, Scheffler, by the way. I mean, like, you know, is he going to defend? I mean, Xander Schauffele here is playing really good, feels really confident, really likes this golf course. It likes him. It's just endless. And again, to me, the majors have become more major, and I can't wait to consume all of this, what's about to unfold.
I agree with that completely. The majors have become more major, and then this particular major is more major yet because we didn't really have much of a President's Cup. So since the last round of an incredible British Open at the Old Course, the three of us were there for that, Cam Smith shooting that 30 coming home to beat Rory McIlroy, who was the 63-hole leader. This particular major with LIV versus the PGA Tour, you know, the Cam Smiths versus the Rory McIlroys has just so much extra emotion to it. To use Alan's word, it's fraught.
Okay, I'm going to retire that word for the short term. Thank you for pointing that out. I mean, the most anticipated dinner in the history of golf. No, it's not the Wednesday night Golf Writers Awards ceremony. It's Tuesday night, the champions dinner, you know, which is kind of this tired old tradition. Like, I really don't care who serves what year to year. I just roll my eyes. But this year, it's like it's like a Mideast peace summit or something. And you bring all these wild cards together, from Gary Player to Bubba Watson to Phil Mickelson, like anything. If you tell me on Wednesday morning that someone got their eye stabbed out over dessert, I will totally believe that. I mean, anything could happen there, despite there's this you know, very thin veneer of Southern gentility. I mean, it's a lot of egos. It's a lot of bitterness. It's a lot of everything. So who knows what's going to happen?
I can, you know, look at JP McManus Pro-Am in Ireland at Adair. There was some tension. There was some concern. The LIV players and tour players were all going to be under one roof. But on behalf of JP McManus and what he had done and what, you know, sort of the genteel sort of nature of this event, there was no problem. And I think if you take Augusta National, a champions dinner, everyone's got a green jacket on, and you got Ben Crenshaw leading the way, and it is what it is. Like, I just don't see anybody being the one. You know, it's like a company party. You want to show up late, you want to leave early, and you don't want to be the one they're talking about the next day. And I just don't think anybody wants to be the one that they're talking about the next day on that Wednesday.
I agree and I disagree, Matt. I agree on the surface that will happen. Everyone will be polite to each other, even though Bubba, Gary Player, especially Phil to a lesser degree, they are half nut jobs and you don't know what's going to come out of their mouth on any given day. But then there's what, you know, then it's like everything in life. There's what's being said and then there's what's not being said. And what's not being said will be in their minds So you don't really have the camaraderie. You don't really have the regaling of the stories. You might be going through the motions of it, but I mean, you need a John Updike level novelist to really sort through it all and tell us what's really going on. And I think when we're really going to see the tension of the Tuesday night dinner show up is Sunday night, if it's Cam Smith versus Rory again. And then knowing these yahoos who, you know, they like to say how genteel the patrons are there, but they're a bunch of redneck yahoos. They might go crazy on Sunday if it's let's say it's Justin Thomas or, you know, any red meat American, you know, Jordan Spieth versus Patrick Reed or any of the Livsters. I think it'll be a nutty scene you'll see something like we've never seen before at Augusta National.
Well, you know, Ian Woosnam got heckled in Amen Corner the year he won, and that fired him up. And, you know, that was kind of the height of when all the Europeans were winning the Masters every year, and there was a sort of low-key xenophobia. It will be fascinating. I mean, I think you both are right that Ben Crenshaw's presence, you have Jack there, you have Fred Ridley, who is like the school principal. So I think it'll be okay. But we all know a guy named James P. Harry. He was a legendary editor at Sports Illustrated, and he coined, I don't know if he coined it, he introduced me to the term smile fuck. And he used that a lot talking about the Masters and Augusta National folks. Like, they smile fuck you. They appear to be like nice and accommodating, but then in the end, you never get your way and you get pushed around. Like, so it's going to be a fun bit that everyone's going to be focused on. And
smile fuck, or also known as bless your heart. Like, that's the Southern. <Yeah. thing. laughs>
And then there's the one McCallum used to love. Love him to death, but, and then whatever came after the butt was, I'd bury the guy if I had the chance. Just a quick note on smile fuck. When Woosnam was playing that fourth round, his playing partner was Tom Watson, and Tom Watson, you know, really was a great playing partner that day. And I think really for many, he was just by the book. He was straight, kind of like what Tiger was later. Tiger may have actually had more warmth than Tom Watson, which is really saying something, but I digress. So Watson said to Woosnam, just do what Don January used to do in these situations. Just nod and say, fuck you very much, fuck you, fuck you very much. You got him through that round.
This podcast has escalated quickly. But to talk about, you know, prosaic golf matters, you know, when we talk about who's a favorite this week. I mean, unfortunately, if you've looked at the forecast, there's a lot of rain supposed to start falling. So a guy like Cam Smith, if it's firm and fast and crispy, that sets up the short game magic. If it plays long and soft, then of course we all know that favors a guy like Rory and or Brooks and some of the bombers. And so the weather at Augusta is always volatile this week. And I don't put too much stock into the forecast 4 days out, but as of this moment, it looks a little grim. So, you know, Patrick Reed, another guy who's going to be at that dinner on Tuesday night, who's a little unpredictable. So, you know, when the course is really firm, guys like Reed and Cam Smith, I think, go to the front ranks. But if it's playing in a different way, then they lose a lot of their advantage. And we should also mention the 13th hole, which is going to be a huge talking point. And I was thinking about this on the flight. It's like, I almost think that the scoring average is going to go down because more guys are going to wind up laying up. And, you know, from 100 yards, you're going to knock it on the green. Either you make the putt or you don't. I think there'll be a lot of fives. Whereas going for it introduces the six and the seven. And I think if you know, that's something that we're all going to watch closely to see how that hole plays out. Because the last thing you want is for it to turn into a 100-yard par three, which it very well could if it's playing soft and playing long. So that's another subplot to keep an eye on.
Well, Scheffler talked about it, you know, when you go back into that tunnel to hit that tee shot, he could hit a three wood before and had an easier time drawing his three wood. He has a harder time drawing the driver like he does the three wood. So he's just going to hit driver out straight and just try to draw it as much as he can, have that, you know, next shot in. I would agree with you, Alan, that I think the scoring average may actually go down, even if they're hitting, even if they have more yardage into that hole as an approach shot, because there's just going to be less people going forward and playing to that their magic yardage with the 80 to 100 or whatever that number is, and just getting a little more specific on the pin, and maybe there will be more birdies, less eagles, and a lot more pars, less bogeys.
I was surprised to read the final accounting is only 35 yards longer. I thought it was going to be lengthened just given what they were doing there and how much land they have. I believe, Matt, you've seen it much more recently than Alan or I. I would have thought you could go much farther back, and I thought they would go much farther back.
Well, it looks way back there. Scheffler told me it's way back there. But, I think 35, maybe 35 yards back from where they had tipped it out. That's still a big difference when you're talking about that specific corner and fairway run out and trying to hit that berm as you're trying to like get that ball. As he said, I'll start using the land a little more to accentuate sort of any kind of draw to his driver, which he has a hard time doing. But, it just looks just like 18, just like 14, just like 17. Every time you just like five, when you look back, you're like, that just seems so far back there. I can't believe the distance they're playing, different from members tees to the back tees, to your point in your article, you just dropped two pretty incredible articles on firepitcollective.com, Michael, and the rollback article again is, I know we kind of see it differently. But I thought, that some of the points you made are valid in terms of the way the game is supposed to be played. I just question why just the ball? Why not the club? Why not the loft of the club? Why not, from an agronomy standpoint, why not have the fairways be a little longer instead of, tight and fat? I mean, I just think there's so many other different versions of what could also take place to sort of account for length. So that's it.
I mean, so one, and that story you wrote, Michael, got a tremendous amount of engagement. I mean, when I tweeted it, I said, it's so nice in these contentious times to have, Michael Bamberger's thoughtful, measured takes on these issues, and which I wholeheartedly endorse. But one comment I thought was interesting, a guy said, well, why do we want to go backwards? Every other sport evolves. That's true. The players do, but the playing fields don't. Basketball court, same size it's always been. Baseball diamonds and ballparks are pretty much the same as they've always been. Like the golf course, because of the way the players play it, the golf courses have totally changed. And so this, again, and we saw this with the ANWA. That's one of the delights of that event, is that it's the old club values. Like what made Rose Zhang's second shot on 15 so fascinating was she was hitting lumber, right? Like, I mean, Sergio and others hit eight, or when Sergio was hitting those great shots in the 15th year he won, he was hitting 8-iron. And a professional golfer with an 8-iron has a much tighter dispersion. There's not that much danger. It's coming in so high, and it's going to hold that green. But a hybrid, things can get wonky. And so that's what's cool, is it's about bringing back the sense of, something could go terribly wrong here. And that just doesn't happen with short irons that often. I mean, every now and then Gallagher had a truly horrendous shot. But when you get the long clubs, I mean, and you and I were talking about this offline, that shot that Rose hit was reminiscent of Seve Ballesteros in 86. Seve should have won that year instead of Jack, but he hit this sniper into the pond at 15, and he pretty much never recovered, right? That one shot haunted him forever and led him down this path of changing his swing. And so, but he had a 4-iron, and with a 4-iron, things can go bad. You give Seve a 9-iron, he's probably gonna knock it on the green. So, anyway, we've had the ball debate, but it will be interesting to see how it all plays out this year. There'll be so much scrutiny on that one hole, and just how the course plays in general, because it's the one yardstick we have, which is they always go back to the same place.
Just two quick notes on 15. In the annals of 15. Francisco Molinari's play there is one of the biggest disasters ever, and it doesn't get talked about enough because he blunked it in the water on 12. He still is in complete position to at least play off, if not flat out win that tournament. Tiger's leaking oil, but really not hitting quality shots, and he makes an absolutely inexplicable layup shot and an inexplicable third shot that leads to a double. So it really nutty things can happen on par fives when guys think they can reach and they can't. And it's Reese Jones and Reese's father, Robert Trent Jones, this guy who put those water hazards in, really made them what they are today. You know, it's not quite accurate when I say the course that McKenzie and Jones intended, because they didn't know that the water hazards are going to come in so penal, but they have, and they're really due to find the course unless it's driver 8-iron, like it was for Tiger on 13, the last time he won. Just to the point on 13 going 35 back, you guys might know, I've never really made a study of this. I'm sure if you just watched the TV, enough TV, you'd know. How many guys are hitting 3-wood at 5-10 versus now we'll hit driver at 5-35? They'll bomb it past where that 3-wood is. Yeah, now Scheffler can't turn it over, and then he's chipping out from the woods, and he'll lay up, and then he'll still have a putt for 4. But a lot of guys will hit that wide fairway. They will use that bank. Now with driver, a little lower, a little hotter, a little more down the hill, they still might. I guess what I'm trying to say is now Augusta National figures out everything, but I'm not sure the hole will actually play even longer at 35.
It's about an angle, though. I think it's really about, by backing them up and having it the ball have to be going so straight for so long before it can actually start turning. I think that's what's going to be the biggest factor on getting it around that corner. To me, that's my sense of from a strategic standpoint, is if you're hitting a draw, if you're not able to sort of sling it out and go wide right, because you're in that the further back that you're in a tunnel. So yeah, you don't have a lot of wiggle room.
You can't sling it. Can't hit a big hook.
That's why, right. That's why Fred used to have his feet outside the tee box and hit the through it as hard as he could with actual hook, which was neat to see. But here's a guy who will love it, Bubba. Bubba will stand up there and hit the hardest slice you've ever seen in your life. Now, let me think. Slice for him is a hook for us. Yes.
Yeah.
And that'll
Phil work. Phil, too. And that's a little, you know, it's very insidery, but the casual fan probably doesn't know that with the modern equipment, guys, the top players fade their drivers way more than they draw them. It just is the shot shape that the technology promotes. Low spin, it's just easier to kind of hit a little bleeding fade than it is a hard draw. And so, I mean, DJ only plays a fade. Brooks only plays a fade. So that adds a whole other layer of intrigue into that hole. And so, it's
Bryson DeChambeau for 72 at Wingfoot. Never saw him hit a hook shot.
Yeah.
Hit it as hard as you can. Hold on for dear life.
Yeah. So
Tiger, when he won in 2019, no hook shots, no draw shots.
Yeah. 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 It's, so
except for that second shot on 15 on Sunday, that was 5-iron. That was gorgeous. And that thing drew 4 yards. It was beautiful, but they can all job mid irons.
Yeah.
I'm talking about that.
Yeah. So, and this is what's so great about the Masters is we all have such an attachment to the golf course and we know it so intimately. I mean, if you asked me to describe the 15th hole at Wingfoot, I would struggle for a while. I might get there eventually, but the 15th hole at Augusta National, every golf fan can picture it. They know the history. They know the lore. They know who's won and lost the tournament there. And it's just what makes this week so much fun.
Having been there fairly recently, I walked away with so much respect and admiration for what takes place at that level for those players to win that golf tournament at that course with those pins and those green speeds. At that length, I can't believe how unsettling that golf course is when you're trying to hit approach shots, you know, chips around the green, putts for that matter. You know, it from a driving standpoint, you know, you're going to have to sort of, at some point you're going to have to move the ball, you know, and it helps if you hit a high draw or if you're a lefty, you know, big high cut. But you've also got to hit it straight. You got to hit it accurate. The greens within those greens to me is what is unlike almost any, you know, Royal Melbourne, maybe. This to me is just the precision and demand for creativity. You understand why Tiger, why Phil, why Zach Johnson or Mike Weir, or you understand why these guys, Bubba, why they've won at this golf course. It takes such a different style to be great at this, at Augusta National. And it's why I think we generally have these incredible leaderboards come Sunday, is people are firing on all cylinders. It's the golf course is something unlike anything, you know, in the world.
And I would add to that, Matt, I agree with all of that. I don't know how anyone who's ever been there or appreciates golf or has watched it closely couldn't agree with that. I would add to that greenside chipping. Greenside chipping is harder there than anywhere. Pitch shots over those traps. You got no grass underneath your golf ball.
And
extremely
difficult. And I don't think people realize the undulation. I know, even as a member of you know, outside the ropes as a patron, walking around, you go down to the 10th hole. Until you actually stand below the 10th green, if you're trying to chip up to a back pin on 10, that elevation is so much, you can't see anything. You're so far down. It's like 15, 20 feet down below the green. You don't realize what a false front that I walked. Again, I am in awe of what I have now seen over the years at that golf course for the players who are playing well. Shoot 65 at Augusta on those conditions is just like, it just identifies the best player and always will. And on 13, and in your article, Michael, you talk about, oh, there's only one real par five. But I also think that the reason why Augusta is so compelling is because there's a lot of half pars, a lot of four and a halves, a lot of three and a halves, like 13 three is a three and a half. I mean, that the half side, the only thing I hope they don't do to 13 is make it not a half. Like, the worst thing they could do to 15 is make it not a par four and a half. Like, that's why it's so compelling to me, that temptation. And that's what I think the golf course is filled with, is half pars. Five is a par four and a half. Great. That also, that volatility is what it yields. And that's why we love this venue more than almost any.
Very, very well said. I completely agree with that.
I've heard Phil talk about this, and, you know, he does some design work, and he says, I want the hard holes to be really hard. I want the easy holes to be really easy. And that's where you get a lot of action. And Augusta National is the quintessence of that. I mean,
then, Alan, on that basis, why was he complaining about the long par three at Marion? It was a three and a half for the whole field.
I know.
Why shouldn't it be a three and a half for him?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Although Mike Davis, because the wind switched, Mike Davis afterwards said, yeah, maybe it was too far.
It's an outdoor sport, as has been noted many times.
Yeah. But, Augusta's cool. And just, you know, for those of us in the typing trade, and really anyone who's inside the gates, I mean, it's such a gathering, you know, everybody's there, not only the players, every agent, every family member, every power broker, every member of the golf establishment. And there's just an energy around that too, especially, you know, last year in the run up to Live Golf's launch, it was pulsating. There's a lot of meetings going on off campus that helped define who was going to stay and who was going to go. And this year, you know, there's everyone who sits on the board of the world ranking, you know, governing body, they're all going to be there. Like, there's going to be some quiet conversations and you name it. Like, it's the one week that nobody ever misses in the golf world. And so, and then there's all the parties and the dinners every night. There's all the schmoozing around the tree. Like, I do look forward to the Masters just from an interpersonal standpoint. Everyone is there and you can get a lot of work done and you can see people you might only see once or twice a year. And I was trying to explain to someone who's not really into golf why this is such a big week. And it's an incredible tournament golf course. We know that, but a lot of it, there's a lot more that goes into the week for those of us who do this for a living. And that's what just makes it extra fun, I think.
I'm unfortunately not going to be able to be there. I'm going to be off in Brewster, Washington, Gamble Sands with David Kidd, which is going to be amazing in itself, but I'll be back on Friday night And so the question is Saturday, the Masters at Goat Hill Park, it's the Saturday Masters. You play for sort of a modified green jacket. On Sunday, I've been invited to a couple parties. Oh, Masters Sunday. And I've said, there's no chance I'm going to a party on Sunday. I need to be on my sofa, sort of maybe close, you know, inner circle family members. You have to hear everything. You have to see every shot.
You gotta lock in.
You gotta lock in. So, and I'll be, you guys, this is what you do. This is your thing. You know, I can't wait to read all that you write. I can't wait to hear all that you say. You know, especially Ogilvy's perspectives obviously are cherished. But I just can't wait to be on my sofa on Sunday, you know, hearing everything. I've said no party. Like having a party on Sunday, the Masters mean you don't, it means you don't really actually care. Doesn't make sense to me at all.
Do you have a favorite Masters you've covered? Because what was your first one? It was in the '80s, right?
No, it was late, very late. 96.
No.
Were we there? Yeah, it was. It was.
You never got there for the Enquirer?
I never went for the Enquirer. I don't think I ever went before. I went to Augusta to play it, luckily enough. But no, I never covered one until 96. That's why I'm barely into the parking. Now, how do you get a parking? Oh, you don't even get that thing anymore. But anyway, I've only started going in 96.
You got to get to 40 Masters. And then they give you a piece of the Eisenhower tree, you get a little plaque, and you get your own parking place. But so
you'll get there before.
Maybe. Yeah. This is like 28 or 29 for me. We're probably close because I missed one. Because of
you missed one, Alan?
Well, I missed
really.
I missed one in 03 or 02 when I was in the office working as an editor. I didn't make.
Yeah, we're not talking about that.
And one. Then yeah, I had a 1 year vacation after I sneaked in the Butler cab and the green coach put me on ice. So I've missed two since 94, whatever that math computes at, but. Yeah, a piece of the tree is the thing. It's actually kind of funny that the Eisenhower tree fell over, but instead of just getting rid of it, they've like preserved it and they use the wood for all kinds of ceremonial purposes. Or that's what they tell you. Maybe it's just from...
I'm shocked with all the connections that Augusta National has. I'm shocked that there wasn't a proper obituary in the New York Times for it.
The Eisenhower tree. why don't you write that? That would have been a great cheeky column. Now I feel cheated.
Alan, tell me if I have this correct. Scheffler, I know, got Player of the Year from the Golf Writers, but that's on the basis of his entire year, no matter where you play. Is that correct? Is that how?
Yeah. So that's actually.
You know, I know I voted for Cam Smith.
So did I.
I didn't. I don't.
See, that's the thing that is what is cool about the Player of the Year from the Golf Writers is it's not defined as. It's just Player of the Year. And so if you win, you know, in Australia in December, like Cam Smith did, like that factored into my vote. And if you win on other tours, including one that has Roman numerals, that could be a factor in your vote. Like it's not specified.
Or if you have a spectacular Ryder Cup, you could add that. Or if you have, you know, a bunch of seconds and put heat on winners.
Yeah, it's just, and so every now and then it's left to the Golf Writers to right a wrong where, you know, the tour players, they vote for, it's a popularity contest and politics gets involved. I guess that could happen with the Golf Writers as well, but we try and I'd like to think that we're agenda free. People are just voting who they think the best player is.
And I think Scheffler, you could definitely make the case to vote for Scheffler. I just saw Cam Smith winning on those two incredibly different courses, Sawgrass and the Old Course, just set him apart.
No question. Yeah. He got my vote as well. So, it becomes an interesting thought exercise. If Brooks Koepka wins a major and he wins four live events, does he get Player of the Year? Like, how do we assign value? It's going to be left to the Golf Writers to assign value to winning on the live tour because no one else takes it seriously. Let's say Brooks wins or any player on live wins a major, finishes second in another, wins a European Tour event. And wins three times on live. Does it nudge? Does it give him a little bump? I don't know. We'll see.
They'll get three votes. I mean, It's like, it's not. I mean, I'm not saying that right or wrong. I'm just saying it's just not going to happen amongst the golf writers. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. No, I mean, it definitely skews towards the traditionalists. But
if you think of Kepka when he won at Bethpage, you know, was playing dominating golf for 3 days. Well, a lot of people have played dominating golf for 3 days. And then he had a lousy fourth round and, you know, he won because nobody else played great. And it's a Bethpage Black. It's a super hard golf course where a lot can go wrong. And the rough was rough. But 54 holes is not 72 holes. I think they should get points and they should get consideration from us. But it really isn't the same.
Yeah. If the PGA Tour had made all their events 90 holes, Tiger would have 120 wins. I mean, the more holes you play, the more opportunities for the best player to separate himself. There's no question. But I will say, having been at enough live events, it's more of a sprinter's mentality. When you know at the outset you have 54 holes, they become precious. And that first round takes on a lot of weight, because if you shoot 73 or 74, you're toast. There's not enough time to make up ground. And so, you know, when a 72-hole event gets shortened to 54, it feels weird. If you know you have 54 to begin with, and that's your mentality, and you got to make every single one count, you know, that is what it is. But anyway, we can save this for another podcast. But again, it's all swirling in the dogwoods, all this stuff. And, you know, there's been a million jokes about, are all the live guys going to, you know, go home on Saturday night because they think there's only three rounds and, you know, this and that. Like, it adds a whole element to this week, and I'm here for it. What else do we need to talk about? What else is going on in this Masters that demands to be discussed?
Well, I think first of all, we just came off a good week of at the Fire Pit Collective, 3-part podcast, Tony Gwynn's greatness. If you haven't listened, took me 2 years to put together. A lot of great voices. Opening day, obviously this week, fun. If you like baseball, if you like Gwynn, please listen. Thank you for listening. Michael, you just dropped two great stories. Alan, yet another big week. I mean, book excerpts. And then next week, the plan being from a content standpoint, as you talked about, daily stories, multiple podcasts, all the socials that go with that, and you know, live from the grounds for both of you. So I just think setting up this week, coming off last week, Anwa, I'm not a drive, chip, and putt guy at all. I really wish it would go away, to be totally honest with you. But Anwa is amazing, and here we go. I just think we can't get to Thursday morning fast enough.
It's a long build up. I mean, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of Masters week, to me, feel like they last a month, because everyone's there and chomping at the bit. And
this, I don't year know how especially
the,
this year.
I know. Especially. I don't know how the players do it. I mean, and you see some of these first timers, by the time they get to Thursday afternoon, they're exhausted because they've played too much and they've spent too much time there. They're trying to soak it all in. But it's kind of the same thing for reporters. Like, we're just ready to go. And getting through the first half of the week is always a challenge. But well, we will service the readership. There'll be fun stuff for sure. Mike and I'll be writing every day, and we know we're working on the podcast schedule. We'll certainly do Thursday, Friday, and Sunday, and we're gonna try and sneak another one in probably on Tuesday.
We have a Laird Sheppard grind coming out, grind episode on Laird Sheppard, who we followed through to last year's Masters. He won the British Amateur, got to play in the Open, then got to play in the Masters and the U.S. Open. And so we're putting that out on Tuesday with an update podcast on sort of where he's at with his life and career as now a professional golfer. So that's definitely coming out on Tuesday.
It's a great episode. We're happy to get another grind episode out into the world, because there's tremendous intimacy with Laird and his friends. And we chronicle this epic comeback he had in the British Amateur. He's 8 down with 19 holes to play in this 36 hole finale and came back and won. It's one of the all time great comebacks in the history of, you know, big time golf. And then, without spoiling too much, Masters week was a challenge for him and how he dealt with that. So that's something to look forward to as well. So, all right. Well, I think we've touched them all for now. It's going to be a heck of a week. We are delighted to be tour guides for the golf fans out there. Thank you to Robin Golf for the sponsorship. Matter Michael, any final parting thoughts?
Well, it's all, you know, just it's a delight to be able to have this opportunity to talk about, you know, people say like, oh, what's been the difference for you from, you know, your old job, which is more of a writing job, to this job, which is just the writing and the podcasting. It's like, I can't believe this is considered a serious part of my payday because it's so easy talking about golf. I mean,
because it's fun. You
know, once I figure out the mechanics of getting the microphone on, I mean, come on. So this is a great week. And we have a good time doing it. And I hope people enjoy listening to it.
Someday we'll release the super cut of getting Michael's microphone dialed in. It'll be like 194 minutes of testing microphones, but today's not that
bad. How about when Mike Murphy just trotted on in there at age 92 and was ready to go?
Aspirational.
Ogilvy's like, wow.
Aspirational, yeah. All right, good stuff. Matt, any last thoughts?
No, just Godspeed, guys, getting there, and can't wait to read and hear all that you'll be coming up with. It's going to be, this is one for the ages. I mean, this is going to be, this is unlike anything we've ever seen in all the years. You know, my first Masters was 1997. There's just nothing. The build up to what is about to unfold, and for all the reasons we've already discussed, it's just almost too much to comprehend.
Alan, all right, let's go to this. Alan, what's your dream to some last group off Sunday afternoon?
Oh, that's the easiest question of the night. It's Rory and Patrick Reed. I mean, tour versus live. Okay. You have the chosen one against, you know, the Dark Lord. Like, it's mythical. It's Shakespearean. It's Greek. It would be fantastic.
I don't agree because the rooting interest is so obvious there. Whereas like Cam Smith, he's a likable guy.
Yeah, well, sure.
And some people just. But it's,
well, I mean, okay, cool. Actually, the honest answer is Tiger against Phil for all the same reasons.
That's what I was like, I'm trying to
deal in reality, not science fiction, like what could happen. But yeah, I mean, that would be fun. I mean, Dustin actually is playing well. He kind of tweaked his back a month ago, but he's rounding into form. Like, I think he's dangerous, especially if the course is soft. Like,
how about the fact that we've been talking golf for 50 minutes now and have barely mentioned the name of 5-time Masters winner Tiger Woods?
Yeah.
That's kind of a sign of the times.
It is. I mean, Tiger's, I think if the course was bone dry, I think Tiger would be more dangerous.
It's not that, Alan. Tiger's got to get, we don't know what's going on in Tiger's life. We've never known. But Tiger should be way ahead of this golf ball thing, way ahead of, you know, make the driver smaller, make the course shorter, whatever his natural, honest position is, live golf, of course. But he's just not there.
Go ahead, Matt. I'm just, I think physically for Tiger Woods, you know, again, the undulations of Augusta National. I mean, forget the skill. I mean, we know he's got the skill to hit the shots. To be able to walk that golf course 4 rounds plus whatever he's going to do from a practice standpoint, I just don't see it happening. Augusta National, you know, old course, maybe. Augusta National is not an easy walk, especially for a guy who basically has, you know, one leg.
But I'm talking about like Tiger Woods, like the Nicklaus role, even the Nick Price role, the Rory role now, of real thought leader in the game. Well, we're not hearing that much from him. I mean,
he had to trick his girlfriend into thinking she was taking a vacation, like, so they could move her out of the mansion and break up with her, which has led to
How did that go for him?
Which has led to a huge lawsuit. Like, it's hard to play. Every top golfer will tell you it's hard to play golf if your mind isn't clear. And when someone has a sick parent or they're going through upheaval in their personal life, it always shows in their scores. And Tiger's life is just so messy. It's so messy.
But also, I don't look to Tiger to be the one who sort of leads people in a way, like with the thoughtful, like Rory runs circles around him, you know, in situations like that. I mean, Phil, you know, has done it in the past, but also like steps on his own foot when, you know, when he gets to the mic and does, you know, the Watson things or does like just flies off the cuff. But Tiger is just not, so many people want Tiger to be something so much more than just like a really good golfer. And he's not any of those things that we all want him to be. He's not, he's never was, he never will be. He's flawed. We're all flawed, whatever. He's just not the, he's not a verbal leader of people in which we all sit there and think, wow, that was really deep and meaningful. And that's the way it needs to be done.
When you're carrying a tampon around a tournament round, so you can slip it to someone as a joke, you might be forfeiting your place as the moral arbiter of the voice of the sport. It's just not a natural role for the guy. It's just not. I mean, his words have weight because he's Tiger Woods, but it just doesn't come easy for him. And so it is, to use one of his favorite expressions, it is what it is. But he's still Tiger Woods. I mean, he still has some magic in his hands. Like, he could go out and shoot 67 on Thursday and turn the place upside down. Like, anything's possible, but the chances of his foot and his back and the and his knee and his neck and his Achilles and all these things feeling good 4 days in a row and letting him do what he needs to do to beat highly optimized 20-something athletes, like, it's asking a lot. But, yeah, I think, I don't know. We'll all watch Tiger keenly, but I don't think this is his Masters. So, but we'll see. Well, this will be fodder for the Thursday and the Friday podcast. So, all right, we tried to end this. We kept going. Now let's end it. We'll release the listeners. But it's always a lot to talk about. So for Michael Bamberger and Matt Janella, this is Alan Shipnuck. This is another Fire Drill. We will be coming at you all week long from Augusta, Georgia. Thanks for listening. And for now, that's the end.
I bet big and I played to win. Made a fortune when my ship came in. I ran the table, never thought I could fall. Then the winter time hit me like a cannonball. And now I can't shake this losing streak. Every road I take is a dead end street. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about.
Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.